I'm Lily.
I'm Lorraine.
And we're caffeinated on a train.
Welcome back, Lily. It's been a while.
It's been a while. I also felt that was a very good intro. We really had the right energy there.
Yes, we are finally learning how to do our own
intro. How to do it, you know? Yeah, so it has been some time since we last recorded. I guess normally we start with what you have done, what you've been up to this last week.
Yes. Yeah, and I have some quality content to talk about.
Please, hit us with it.
I am now, I've been saying this for a bit, but I am now truly in the final stretch with my thesis.
Put some applause sound effects here.
I will do that. And some, cheering.
Yes, maybe some air horns.
Good idea. Good notes for future,
yeah,
Lorraine.
Yeah, notes for later.
I have got a full draft and printed it off, which is...
Yeah, that's how you know. That's how you know.
Exactly. That's such a sign of progress. And I'm now going through it and doing what I believe will be the second last round of editing. I'm going to do this round and then maybe send it to a couple of people and get some feedback and then do one more round of editing. And I think I'm basically done.
Nice.
But I'm at a place where for a while I was feeling a little bit unsure with it. Kind of felt like I couldn't see the forest for the trees.
Yes, that's a really good way of saying it. You just kind of get lost and bogged down in it. And it's, yeah.
Absolutely. Bogged down, mired down, lots of nature metaphors.
Yeah, a lot of nature metaphors. We're in a dark forest right now.
Exactly, with a swamp.
Yeah, there's definitely a swamp involved.
Quicksand, possibly?
Possibly. It's not sure. It's very murky in there.
There might be an alligator around
there might
somewhere.
Be an alligator. There might be some sort of goblin...
You
creature.
Have to take this into consideration.
You do. That last round of edits.
Yeah. So, I mean, who knows? Maybe some goblins will appear. But, as I'm going through it now, there are a lot of places where I just feel very confident that it's already in its final form.
Chef's kiss reading. Your
Chef's
yeah.
kiss. Yes.
Yeah, nice. That's really, that's a feat. You know, this has been a long time in the works, and I'm really happy that it's feeling that way. And I've said this before, but overall, I've admired your process, because I think some people really have, crash and burn drama in their thesis, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I feel like overall, you've sustained interest in what you wanted to write about. You were excited, and you were able to, come up with a question in the first place. And overall, it doesn't seem like you've had too many major roadblocks or anything like that, so...
No, overall, it's been a really positive experience, and I'm happy to say that there hasn't been any stage in the process where I felt unhappy with my topic.
Yeah, which could suck if you're I don't even care about this anymore, and now I have to, edit this thing.
Mm-hmm. And I think this is a pretty common experience.
I think it's really common, yeah.
I hear a lot of people who, at the end of their thesis, they're I never want to think about this
again. Yeah, definitely. So that's great. That's, a lot to be happy about, and grateful about, and proud of.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
What have you been up to this week?
You know, really a smattering of things, one could say. I guess technically I'm on semester break, but I took the first 2 weeks off, basically the rest of July after the semester ended. I was doing a lot of socializing, just had a lot of novelty to it, but then starting in, I can't believe it's already the 12th of August, but I guess starting in the beginning of August, I decided to get back to work on my term papers, and I have had a similar experience with this paper that's not a thesis, but has felt like it's taking as long as a thesis would.
It has.
Yeah, honestly.
How long have you been working on this paper, Lily? Tell our dear listeners.
I started it over last semester break, and it started out innocently enough as just, you know, I was working on it in Argentina, and it was a nice workflow. It's a lot of what I was doing there, actually, was hanging out in cafes and taking my time, and the idea was developing well, but knowing me, I think it's the Virgo ascendant, actually, if I had to put my finger on one, if to point a finger at one part of
You would point your finger
myself.
At Virgo.
Yeah, always. but just the idea that I was trying to do, it just developed the way that it did, and I feel strongly about making a truly, rigorous and sound argument that's not, you know, saying something adjacent to what I'm saying. And as I was doing that, I felt that there was initial kind of interventions I had to make in my theory, so the paper became very theory heavy, and trying to just connect the dots between a number of different sources, a number of different theories, and to kind of situate them properly in their context and not, you know, make these big jumps where I'm to do it properly, what it was naturally kind of developing. It just ended up taking a lot of time. And then there was the semester, and then there was the pandemic, then there was the semester. And I mean, I don't have to tell you, dear listener, you've been alive during all this. So yeah, just kind of spun out of control at times. And the paper was difficult intellectually to engage with. So I was not always in the proper headspace. So there was a lot of stop and start and frustration. Some time where I was also in the famous black forest of edits, you know.
With the swamp and the goblins.
I did find a few goblins, I must admit. Anyways, I also am now, I just finished the last round of edits. I need to proofread it for sure, but it's done. And there was a time close, not so long ago, that I was not feeling satisfied with the result and was kind of prepared to just be like, look, I tried to do this thing. It didn't really work, but I can't deal with this anymore. That was going to be high. I already even like wrote a direct email to my professor basically saying this, but actually... I did the same thing as Lorraine, which was take time away, and I came back to it and was able to engage with like a certain level of confidence that I think I didn't have before, because before I would work on it and I would get bogged down in my own ideas and be afraid to delete something or know where I can kind of shape it. And it was just, I was more confident kind of manipulating the work that I already had to make it flow better. And to a lot of the problem was that it was very meta paper, and how to add, like, sprinkle in the meta parts without it being like so mind-bending and confusing was a huge challenge. And I will never write another term paper that will take me this long. I refuse to do it or be this complicated. But I think in the end I am satisfied with the work that I have produced.
If you count the time that you were in the class prior to writing the term paper, you have been writing this for as long as I've been writing my thesis.
That's something that I have to live with. And some way I'm going to have to come to terms with that. Hopefully my professor is at least like impressed that I came up with this, because I don't think that this is the expectation that we need to come up with a paper that's this complicated, this theory heavy, or this meta.
I dare say not.
So, it's really in the final stretch. I just need like maybe like one more morning or afternoon to do the final proofread, and then I can hand it in, and that's amazing. But yeah, I've been doing other stuff. I've been pretty into fermenting. As a side note, that's been a summer project, and yeah, I'm making kefir right now. I'm making kimchi. My apartment smells like fermenting cabbage right now. Sorry, Lorraine.
Don't be sorry.
Yeah, and trying to enjoy summer, but time has really been flying. I was hoping to have, a relaxed... But in the way I'm kind of happy, because it's meaning that, you know, like, what I'm doing during my semester is also kind of in some way what I'm wanting to do when I'm not formally expected to be doing it, in a way. You know what I mean? Like, working on writing and reading, and I've been, you know, attending lectures, these kinds of things. Like, I'm still doing these things out of my own volition, even though it's not being imposed, and that's actually a good sign. But I do feel like the time has been flying by this semester break.
I think that the time has been flying by because it's the middle of August, and we've only had 3 weeks of semester break. So it feels like it should be quite late in the semester break, that's but true. Actually it just started.
It's not really, I think is that it's summer break. It's the break from the summer semester. And normally in like the North American system, you have the summer off. But I think in a way it would probably be more, make more sense to think of it almost as like a fall break.
Yeah, exactly.
Because the bulk of it is in September and October and part of November. And right. We're not even sure how long in November, to be honest. Hopefully not too long. Because like then it's going to be weird, because it's going to be like Christmas and we're going to feel like, oh, we're almost done with the semester, but we won't be. You'll be out of that by now, hopefully.
Yeah. Although, I don't know what my next semester is going to look like.
True.
My thesis will be done by it, and hopefully I'll be in PhD territory.
Stuff, yeah.
But I don't know whether I'm going to be like doing anything semester related. I'm hoping that I'll be able to teach, but I don't really know. And everything's online, so like, who even knows?
True. Maybe you can teach in more places because you can...
This is a thought.
You have more spatial flexibility.
Call up some universities. Like,
yeah, UPEI maybe.
My fiance also suggested that.
I think you would maybe love that in a way, wouldn't you?
I don't know if they're going to be doing online teaching though, because PEI has handled the pandemic so well. They're like, I think there are no cases there right now. So they might go back to
it. It seems like a magical, lovely place.
It really is. Yeah, maybe I'll pop off an email to the department chair and be like,
hey, remember me?
Hey, Greg.
I'm back. Yeah, I mean, yeah. I think it's a good thing. I've learned to kind of reap what you have sown, in the sense of like, you've put in, take where you've like put in work to set up relationships or positive regards, and
there's something to be said for that. Maybe there's
something to be said for that. We don't always have to slash and burn and start from scratch,
right,
in the forest of
I'm gonna include a forest metaphor in the description of this episode.
Please do. Maybe even a forest pun in the title if we're really on the ball.
We'll see
about that. Yeah, so it sounds like we've been up to some good stuff. It's interesting. That's kind of an exciting, unknown kind of precipice that you will be standing on at the end of this next month or so.
Yeah, it's crazy. And I'm not worried about it per se, but it's a different part of life, and I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's a life transition to just be aware of, you know, that's like a thing.
Yeah, and I'm Capricorn, and Capricorns don't like necessarily do badly with changes, but I don't think we really like...
You're not like we're not dying for them.
We're not like itching for stuff to change. We're not itching for like change as a concept.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I think that Earth signs maybe get a bad reputation for like being bad at handling change, because I also think that I'm relatively like able to deal with a change, but yeah, we do like some level of routine and stability if we can find it.
Routine, stability, plans, predictability.
It's almost like if we can anticipate the change,
right?
It's fine.
Yeah,
but if it's like a person or an environment that might change at any moment that we don't know, and that's what they're telling us, it's like, I refuse.
Or if we know that there's going to be change at some vague point in the future, but not in such a way that we can plan around it.
Yeah, totally. It's this kind of, if we can process it, then if we can make a plan to handle the change, then we're A-okay. But
exactly.
But then there's also like the emotional terrain of just like going through a transition of being in a different thing, mm-hmm. on top of what we have already sort of been talking about. And I think I appreciate that we have a kind of running discourse that hasn't faded around the ways that like residual or ongoing factors related to the pandemic continue to impact our headspaces and our capacities in various parts of life. And this could be also kind of just tied to that, you know, like this last year has been pretty crazy, and now you're about to go through this like life transition of moving out of your master's degree to your PhD.
Mm-hmm. And not only moving out of a master's degree to a PhD, but moving out of like 19 years of like class oriented.
Yeah, like structured for you.
Exactly.
Into programs.
Into like something where I will be doing all the structuring. I am the mistress of my own time. What the fuck?
But, you know.
Yeah.
It could be positive, you know, for sure.
Yeah. And right up until like the pandemic and everything being so crazy, I was like, yeah, I'm so hyped for this. I can't wait. And now I'm like, well, maybe I would like a little bit more structure.
Yeah. I mean, I think in a way I will miss personally taking classes. I like classes. I like the kind of surprise of knowing what's offered, and I think that I personally would miss, because it's just an avenue for learning, like you know, it's like, oh, they have already sifted together this curriculum, and I just have to like be along for the ride. It's kind of nice.
And the pandemic has meant that some of the alternative forms for learning that could replace classes, like going to conferences or to regular lectures at places like the ICI. These are kind of gone. And I've never gotten into the Zoom lecture, Zoom conference
thing. It's hard. I feel sort of bad. I went to this one that was with some academics and some brilliant thinkers, and people were, I'm just blown away by their work. But I also felt bad because, to be honest, it was like, for me, I think it was at like 8:30 or something, because it was like a conference in a different time zone. And I was like, at the end of my day, I was laying on my bed listening to it. And I'm just like, I don't feel like I'm getting as much out of this or doing this justice. And I simultaneously feel sort of bad because, as I say, this is like a really awesome chance to hear these people speak. But you know what I mean? Like,
but then it's
that's
like,
really like just a podcast.
Exactly. Like, yeah. And I, side note, I hate live streams, like live anything. I'm just
unless it's our
it.
Thesis writing.
Yeah, obviously. But then I won't be the one. I won't be like watching.
You're
live
not the
stream.
Actor. Yeah, you're the.
I don't mind. Yeah. I don't mind the concept of being live streamed, but like I don't want to watch a live stream.
Sorry.
Live cam.
You know, I had to do it. Yeah. I had to do it. Yeah. I get you.
It's the same. I don't like watching broadcast TV. I like don't like that there's a time pressure on when I can consume the
totally,
content.
Totally. Because it's unlike a podcast in the sense that like it's not. I can't just like put this on my like list of stuff I want to listen to and like listen to it when I'm ready for it.
Exactly. At like at the time that I'm ready, in the lengths of time that I can process it.
There should be like an option that you could get a pre-recorded. Like you could get the not pre, but like you get the post. Recording of it, and then even if I had to like choose between the two for some reason, I would prefer that. It's like my yoga teacher was doing like classes on Zoom, and but she had the option that if you wanted instead to just get like her video recording, and then I could just like do it when I wanted to, and that was so much better. And maybe they should do something like that with lectures, that you have like the option to.
Yeah, some of the organizations or groups that have been putting on lectures that I'm aware of have been doing things like that. And then, like, some of them I have watched afterwards. But, like, then it's no different from the podcast.
Yeah, and you're not able to. You lose the interactive element if that's what you're into.
So if the content is still really good, like, that's really cool. Yeah. But there's a lot of great content out there on the internet.
So much. That's the thing that I'm actually having a struggle with that we haven't talked about. Like, just feeling overwhelmed with info lately. I don't know if there's anything to like attribute that to, but I feel like multiple people have been like sending me podcasts or like documentaries and books. I have so many books, and a friend of mine is doing this Verso Books book club I was telling you about, and it's really nice of her and really cool of her, but she's like letting me read half the books and then we swap so that I get it for free basically. But it's just like it's so much, like I don't even and I kind of like the challenge, which I feel like you might relate to. But it's a lot, and it's feel very inundated with info to process these days.
And our brains are not at top processing capacity when we're still coming off of this, like, multiple months of being in a pandemic and adrenaline response and
Ambient stress,
specific stress,
various crises. Also just, like, a brain fog from work from home for me. I feel like that's been, like, a thing that I've been wrestling with as well with my productivity. Is, like, I don't feel oftentimes, again, this forest metaphor, we're back in the forest. It's very murky, very foggy. Can't really see where I'm going. Can't see the forest for the trees, if you will. And so it's I'm not really sharp, like, having a poignant or, like, sharp sense of, like, able to process stuff that's coming at me.
I've experienced this really strongly with my reading over the whole pandemic. I think a couple episodes ago I talked about the mystery novels I was reading as brain comfort food. And the book that I'll talk about in the reading section of this, kind of a similar thing. Like, I can't consistently take in, like, hard-hitting content with the kind of critical response or processing that
it's not sticking in a way.
Yeah, exactly.
Or
it's like it tires me out in a way that it normally wouldn't.
I feel like even people I know who are avid readers, and I feel like both of us read a fair amount and like, you know, go through things, I've heard other people say that they've like struggled actually to read during this time, is I was hoping that I would really be, like, sometimes you get into a flow and you're really just, like, burning through books.
Yeah.
But I have found that it's actually been, like, I feel like I'll be, like, oh, man, like, I'm stuck on this freaking, like, 270-page, like, novel for, like, 2 or 3 weeks, and I don't, like, why is this taking me so long? It's, like, I can't get through a book.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that is a thing that's been happening to a lot of people. It's, like, hard to sit with like a lack of stimulation in a way. I also find that my, like, sometimes I've been, like, at various points of this, like, really addicted to social media, just because I think it's hard for me to just, I mean, there's, like, this kind of, like, adrenal addiction thing that can happen, but there's also this sense of, like, it's hard for me to just, like, sit with my feelings, or, like, I think that something about, like, reading and the kind of concentration and engagement that reading requires, I'm, like, not able to do, because I'm, like, there's too much, like, ambient feelings, and I'm just, like, looking for, like, a cheap distraction.
Absolutely.
You know? And I guess I find myself being, like, why am I doing this? Like, I could be reading a book right now. Like, what am I? But it's, like, no, I can't. I wish I could, but I couldn't do that right now.
And so all of this put together kind of means that something like watching a Zoom conference or a Zoom lecture, it's just, like, not really what the doctor ordered.
No, totally. And I'm not really. And in fact, I don't know if you remember this guy, this Capricorn, who was in my classes, who I like from last semester, who I had, like, a coffee date with him. And it just turned into us, like, going, like, deep into, like, the argumentation of the various sources that we've read in class. And it was, like, that was really intense. Well, he wants to meet up with me to go over our respective lectures, because he went to one that I wanted to go to, but they were, like, sold out, and then I went to one that he wasn't able to go to, and I've been really procrastinating. I actually hadn't told you about it, because I'm just, like, oof, like, I don't know if I'm, like, gonna be able to, like, do that right now. This, like, have, like, a call where I have to, like, I'm just, like, man, I mean, I have my notes, I have, like, what some stuff that jumped out at me that I thought was interesting, but now this talk was, like, 10 days ago,
and, oh,
like,
wow, man,
I'm just, like, bro, I don't know if I can really, like,
not over a call.
Yeah, I was like, can we at least, like, get a coffee, you know, and maybe I can, like, kind of, like, yeah, anyway. So, yeah, I completely get that, and I it's funny that you bring that out, because I've been, like, oh, no, like, I really don't know if I'm gonna be up to snuff for that again. I was, like, I'm, you know, it was, like, end of semester when I was, like, sharp last semester, and I was still, like, that was a lot, but now I'm, it's gonna be, anyway. So I completely get what you're saying. It's hard to, you know, because then there's also, like, doom scrolling, and there's all this, it's hard to, like, have the control and the ability to, like, put up constructive blinders in a way of, yeah, like, when to, yeah. I know something that's helped me is just generally trying to have, like, pretty strict boundaries around my, like, stimulation, and that's changed throughout the whole situation, but lately something that's helped me is to wait, like, min 30 minutes after I wake up in the morning. And I think I want to try to keep this as a habit before I, like, check my phone or check the news or anything. Like, so I have, like, some time and make my coffee, like actually realize, like, where I am in my own head before I get into. And I think that having these kind of boundaries with stimulation is really essential.
That's a really good idea.
Continues to be essential. Mm-hmm. Probably before bed as well. I don't, for a long time, I don't sleep with my computer or my phone in my bedroom. And I think that it really makes a difference with, like, the blue light and, like, just my ability to, like, yeah. But I think that these things help.
Yeah, I am much more pasted to my phone than I would like to be. I use my phone as an excellent alarm clock.
Right.
And so obviously it's the last thing before I go to bed. And then I really have a habit of, like, using the blue light in the screen to, like, wake me up in the morning.
I see.
which, like, is very effective, but also, you know, maybe I could at least be doing something a little bit, like, better for my mental health to use that screen than, like, just going on Instagram.
Yeah, and there are apps that I think minimize the blue light. Mm-hmm. And, like, I would honestly recommend investing in, like, a cheapy alarm clock. Like, you can get a...
At some point, we need to talk about my alarm app on the podcast, because it is chef's kiss.
What's...
It's so good. It's called Sleep Cycle. We're just going to derail the podcast.
We're derailed. I'm happy. I'm with it, though. Like, we're talking about good stuff.
It's... The premise of this app is that... there's, like, a microphone function, and it like is aware of how much
it's you're the only one who can access this app because it's have you ever thought about that? Because I've never heard of this app. Have you considered that?
Well, if it's then he's
helping you out, really.
He did real good, because the premise is like it wakes you up like in a window of time when you are moving the most, when you are most awake.
That's kind of cool.
So good, because I would always have a problem with alarm clocks where like,
so it like knows would, that you're already waking up when exactly. It wakes you up.
Yeah, and it's
that's
like
cool, the actually. That's really cool.
The sound like comes on very slowly. It's extremely like comfortable to wake up to instead of just like going on.
Yeah.
Also something I really like is the like snooze function. Instead of like having to press a button, you kind of smack your phone against the bed.
That's a mood. That's what you want to do when you're woken up prematurely.
Exactly. And it like automatically like sets a snooze window that like gets shorter and shorter as you approach like your final time that you've set as like the hard deadline for waking up. It's so good. And
That's cool.
I single-handedly credit it for like fixing my ability to sleep.
Wow, that makes sense. You know, as you know, I'm a pretty big sleep quality advocate. I think it makes
Taurus.
Yeah. I'm more feeling stronger and stronger about this as the years go by. That like, I generally think most people don't get adequate sleep on a consistent basis, and that like sleep is like super essential to health, mental health, physical health. So many like hormones that you need to like repair your body are activated when you sleep. I find that my resilience to stress is like way lower if I don't sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And so many things. So as you know, I think around this time of this the pandemic, I stopped using an alarm clock, and I really advocate things. I mean, 'cause I also have dealt with insomnia various times in my life, so I know what it feels like, and you got to do what you got to do to get enough sleep. And I think as you get older, it gets harder. I feel like that's a thing.
Mm-hmm. So I really don't want to mess with any of my...
You don't want to fool around with...
Yeah, I'm really happy with this app, even if it is
designed... surveilling you.
Obviously.
Well, but, you know, there's a trade.
Yeah. Of all the stuff that he's getting out of me, like, I'm not sure that me being asleep is, like, the juiciest content. He's just going to have to listen to, like, hours of me being asleep.
Muffled slapping the phone.
Yeah, Hans, you know, whatever works
he's
for you.
He's dedicated, you know.
He is.
You just might say something important in your sleep just once.
That's
you know?
True. That's true. And he wouldn't want to be the one to miss it.
He wouldn't want to miss that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm going to bleep out his name every time.
Yeah, every time. Yeah. Also,
I know.
Bleep that out.
So cute.
I know. This is a side note. That's juicy details. So maybe it's time that we transition into this 30-minute premise into our topic of the day, which is the concept, if you will, of temporality. And I think that for me, it's just something that's been coming up a lot, both in my research and various kinds of academic content that I am engaging with, but also, of course, as a kind of takeaway from the experience in the online semester and the pandemic, as well as just my own relationship to work and to day-to-day life. It's been a pretty significant thing that's coming up a lot. So I wanted to talk about temporality. And yeah, just how it feeds into engaging with academia. Where to begin?
Do you want to begin by telling our dear listeners, because like not everyone is as engaged in the academic concept of temporality as you are. Like,
yeah.
When we're talking about temporality, like what does this mean?
Yeah, so I'll start there, and then I will bring you to like how it has converged personally in my own life. Because it, for me, first of all, I'll say I'm like generally quite a time-oriented person. I really like schedules and routines, and I know when I have just a very I'm just very time-oriented. So I have a pretty intimate relationship with time, one might say. And so I guess I would start. So this idea has quite like it really affected me, but as you probably know by now, a lot of my research has to do with trajectories of capitalism and the ways capitalism has morphed society over time. And last year, I guess, I don't know, maybe 2 years ago now, I famously did a research paper about capitalist temporalities in James Joyce's Dubliners. Wow. Can't believe I'd ever bring this back up again.
That paper is like weirdly stuck with you.
Yeah, I mean, not so much, to be clear, dear listener, not so much Dubliners, but the theories around temporality were, you know, as I say, I mean, I've been interested in engaging with the ways capitalism has reordered life as we know it for a long time, like many years, really, since the beginning of my undergrad, I would say. But I just hadn't really understood the way that the construct of time that we are indoctrinated into is very much bound up to capitalism. Basically, the entire idea of clock time is something that emerged during industrialization, because as economies grew and production increased, it was really important that things were coordinated between transportation for our workers, as well as goods and resources and raw material. All these things needed to be coordinated together, so it became necessary that there was like a way to keep track of and communicate and orient in succession people's activities as they related to capitalism and the workday. And definitely I think transportation is a really big one, and as transportation evolved, so did our use of clock time, because before that time was much more cyclical and less linear and was much more oriented around phases that would happen in nature, such as like our circadian rhythms, so you know, sunrise, sunset, the seasons, things like this. And it was much smoother and less regimented, less specific. And if you get into now, like, we're all operating on like the same time, you know, there was a time when we would still be, you know, oh, his watch must be running late kind of thing, you know, but now, and for a while, I think there was like, it was famous, like the Olympic clock, or there was once this clock that was like the true time. And I think that that happened a few decades ago now, but it was like a big deal if you're a time nerd, I guess. But now, like all of our, we all have the same time and we're all running on this very regimented set of time. And this idea just really affected me because that's so pervasive to me. And that's something that I experience like quite intimately every day. And that really does order and govern my life. And to think that is all this kind of result of capitalism and industrial life really affected me. So I've been kind of wrestling with that. And I've encountered other ways that this has come up in various disciplines, such as like decolonizing time. And again, this idea that temporality is not this linear thing so much as we think it is. And like our relationships to past, present, and future are really governed by our indoctrination into a capitalist and like Western colonial mindset. And there's many actually fields. Some get more esoteric with this idea than others, but this lecture I attended recently was about Afro-feminist futures and was largely actually about how we need to reorient our relationship to time and to past, present, and future. So it's definitely a thing that's out there. And that's also why I've been thinking about it, because I'm actually going to write one of my term papers about temporality and diaspora narratives. And the way that we experience trauma and that disrupts linear time.
I'm so excited about that.
Thank you. Paper. Thank you for saying that, because I need to get back into that. So your idea of the paper can be like very exciting, but then like
totally.
The process of actually having to write it is like another thing.
We all know like 80% of the fun of a paper is like coming up with the topic and the concept and writing the abstract. Title,
yeah.
And then you're like, wait.
But totally, yeah. Totally.
But like side note, I'm really excited about that. That intersects with a lot of my interests.
Amazing. Maybe you can help me get some sources for that. I'm sure we have some overlap there. So yeah, it's definitely like something that's come up for me and continues to be a reoccurring idea, because not only with necessarily, because I think that these exercises can be quite revolutionary and deconstructing and decolonizing the way that we think, which is really important and really exciting to me. And quite, this gets into the sort of like meta and like a sort of spiritual or existential way of thinking that is what I really live for. So that's, I think that this time playing around with this idea is like a portal to these deeper ways of like stepping outside of our conditioning, which is, as I say, it's very exciting for me. But I think personally, aside from this kind of academic currents, and feel free to leave a comment in on the social media platform of your choice if you are curious more about this idea or would like sources or more info about it.
We don't even have to wait for them to leave comments. We could like post some sources on our social media platform.
Could post some sources and and then you'll know what we were talking about when we did that.
Note to editing Lorraine, make sure that some good sources go up on our social media platform.
Yes, we can we can talk about some of the things that we've encountered on this topic because it's a cool one. I think it can, there's a lot of applications to it and it's pretty interesting. But then on a personal level, as you know, we go to school in Germany, where already the kind of relationship to time and completing your degree or even on smaller, more intermittent assignments such as term papers, there aren't really deadlines. And famously, Lorraine talks about, do you want to say it?
I famously quote, I believe it's Parkinson's Law, which is that work expands to the amount of time you have to do it. And so if you have 6 months to write a paper, then that paper is going to take you 6 months. And if you have 3 days to write a paper, then miraculously, essentially the same paper is going to take you 3 days.
Precisely. And this idea, I think, does therefore kind of reciprocally affect your like your way of dealing with time and the work that you're doing, and then also the development of your ideas and the pacing of your process of completing a master's degree. And Lorraine and I have talked about how there can be this difficulty because then where that sounds very like relaxed and is really nice because you can find your own pace, and I'll talk about that more later. It also comes with the caveat of therefore having a harder time letting go of a project and turning it in and knowing that you, because you have all this time, you can continue working at it and working at it and working at it little by little. And it can be hard to know when to like cut yourself off and get that thing onto the powers that be.
Absolutely. And there can even be difficulty starting when you know that there's no real end date. And so I think a lot of people have trouble ever finding the motivation to even begin working.
I think that's a very common problem, even maybe perhaps a more common problem.
I think they're kind of variations. At what stage does it hit you? Does it hit you before you ever start writing, or does it hit you when you've written like the first couple paragraphs and then you wander off somewhere?
Yes.
In the forest.
We're back in the forest.
The metaphorical forest.
It's murky. There are foreboding creatures.
Right now, we're on some paths, but they're looking a little sketchy and there might be goblins on them.
At least a few roots that you might trip over.
Right.
And like me, you might have some sort of, you might have been marked by some sort of hex. A lot of stuff going on in the metaphorical forest. I won't explain. So there's this element as well of time, but then I think all of this has been exacerbated by the current conditions of pandemic and online semester, which genuinely have disrupted a kind of naturally and consistently flowing path. And for me, that has been challenging because, again, I think it's my Virgo ascendant, but I have internalized a lot of these kind of arbitrary, especially from being in this like North American and like a lot of really competitive environments in the North American educational system. And I think it can be really hard for me to, and I have had to do that during this last semester, to kind of like confront that, that like anxiety that I get and this like kind of arbitrary and fairly irrational push on myself. And just how there's all these external impositions of time that we're supposed to follow, which then brings us back to this kind of intellectual and academic terrain that has dealt with this idea. But for example, like I've stopped using alarm clocks, and that's like a, I think it's a good example of this, of like, I've moved myself off of this like capitalist time in a lot of ways and have become more, and I think this is a general lesson from the pandemic, but more in touch with my own, like where I'm at and what I'm able to do and how to work with what kind of energy I'm bringing to the day.
This is something we talked about at some length in our caffeinated coronavirus manifesto.
Totally, totally, and exactly, and it's something that I've been continuing to confront both, like, in my day-to-day life in terms of, again, working with the energy that I have, respecting my own kind of natural circadian rhythm, for example. It feels sort of radical in a small way to, like, it feels almost taboo that I, like, don't use an alarm clock, you know? Like, I get up when I wake up, like, and of course I'm lucky to do that in the lockdown in my case, and the online semester has been helped me to be able to do that. But I think that, again, there's, like, this, we have, like, almost an instilled lack of trust in ourselves that I'm, like, regaining, that, like, I actually wake up at the same time pretty much every day anyway. But I think, therefore, yes, the things that have driven me, or the ways that I kind of engage or perceive time, have changed. And it's a constant thing where I'm having to focus less on even what time it is and more on what I'm actually feeling, and respecting the pace and the rhythm that I am bringing to each day. And doesn't look any different to anybody else, but it's a quite different orientation to work and to just my perception of my day, really, which has been a really interesting thing to play around with. But yeah, it's also been about, with respect to paper writing, like, having to, like, work against this, like, sometimes a spur of anxiety, mm-hmm. that's like, I should be done with this right now, like, why is this taking me so long, blah 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 blah, and having to, like, be like, that is the capitalist inside of my brain.
I will add, not only is it the capitalist, but it's, like, the capitalist academic, the, like, North American neoliberalized academic that's, like, everything has to be on deadlines and on schedules, and you have to get everything done under this really intense pressure for this specific deadline because we said so.
Time is money.
Yeah. Or something. Whose money? Not mine.
Yeah. Well, except for the massive amounts of money that I'm paying.
Yeah.
In that system. But, yeah.
And I feel like there have been a lot of times, kind of through the whole time we've known each other almost, where there have been situations like this with some deadline or other, and as many times as I've told you that there aren't deadlines in the German system, I've seen how there's, like,
internally tormented.
Yeah, it's like it doesn't quite
stick.
Yeah, it doesn't quite get through. Yeah. It's like it's so deeply ingrained.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that this whole, especially this pandemic semester, and the fact that we have had this, like, concrete out about things, it's like an excuse for everything. But, like, what do you say, considering the current circumstances? Is that your line? That you? I love it. So, who can argue with that, you know?
Yeah. I often, if I'm writing that in an email, I will capitalize current circumstances. or
scare quotes it?
No, it's always capitalized.
Quotes kind of undermines it.
It's a different thing, yeah.
Yeah.
I'll also do that with unprecedented times. Nice. Capital U, capital T.
This is, like, my new, instead of modern times, capitalist temporality, that's unprecedented times. Right. Yeah. My excuse for everything under the corona crisis.
These times, capital T.
Yeah, you know the ones.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that that's basically it. And it's been like a really healthy and positive and healing in a way. Like, I think I also spoke at one point about, like, doing inner child work during our, and I think that it is, it's like learning to respect myself and my boundaries. And that's not to say, like, that I just automatically am like, sometimes it is like, I just don't feel like doing this today, so I'm not going to. But sometimes it's like, well, what can we do to just, like, give it a shot and see how it goes? But then, like, respect it if it's not happening. But then I think that there is a temporal dimension to all of that, mm-hmm. and to, yeah, just, like, having realistic priorities as well, and both giving the work the respect it deserves and the time it deserves, therefore, and also myself, and trying to, I mean, because I will say this, as we're, this feeling that this semester break is flying by, it's, like, the other thing that I'm perceiving, at least, but, I think trying to hold space for just, like, not really doing anything is also, like, I feel sort of radical in this kind of neoliberal paradigm that we are indoctrinated into, that, like, that's also valid ways of spending your time is not producing or working. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about this before too, and how that can feed back into and prevent burnout. It's been quite healing for me, and I think it will be more difficult when there's more like externally. If I'm just like I by my own time, I'll show up to this thing when I feel like it. Although I think some people do actually just live like that.
Oh, absolutely.
This is just
and those people are extremely frustrating.
Yes, they're the worst. For sure. Yes.
We are still both earth signs, after all.
There's limits, too. Although, if any earth sign was going to do this, it would be the Taurus. It's very Leo, though. We are in Leo season. That I know, like, my grandfather and my mom famously are like this. Famously, like, infuriatingly late to stuff. Because they come when... any time is a guideline. Basically.
Well, with a Leo, it's like, I'm not late, you were early.
Yeah, and there's nothing you can do to convince them. That's just the truth. Mm-hmm. That's the reality that we are all living in as soon as they have dictated it.
I feel like it's really Geminis, though, who would pull the, like, I don't abide by your clock time.
Yeah, and maybe some Aquarius.
Yeah, but, absolutely. Yeah. Fucking air signs.
Jesus Christ. No.
But, you know, as long as it's not impinging upon someone else's valid use of their time, because that's the thing with this, like, the good thing about having a standardized system of time is that your time then doesn't hamper someone else's ability to use their time.
Yeah.
But in a situation like lockdown or quasi-lockdown, when that is removed, it's again one of these, like, closed experiment systems.
Yes. Yes.
You just don't have to worry about that.
Yes, totally, totally. And I think then it can maybe make us more thoughtful and more realistic about how we engage with other people's time. And yeah, just seeing time as a really precious... it's something that I think that has been, like, sort of monetized, like, the way that we relate to time. It's, mm-hmm. like, connected with money. But it's also just, like, our literal life... time, like, so I think that it can just change the kind of respect that you give to the way that you spend your time, how much time you take on things, and yeah.
I think something for me is, like, time, a unit of time doesn't have a specific unit of value,
and yeah,
like, how much quote-unquote time something takes, that's not actually, like, necessarily a valid measure. The more valid measures have to do with how much energy it takes, how much thought, or
quality,
how much...
yeah.
Yeah. And so something like, how long does it take to write a paper? Well, I don't know. It depends on how fast you write it.
Yeah.
3 days? 6 months? Who knows?
But one of them is not necessarily... Because I think it's interesting, actually, because when we talk about this paper that I'm writing that has taken so long, the way that you talk about it, and I really appreciate it, I never felt like a judgment or like a value judgment put on me that it's taken me so long. And it can be easy to feel mm-hmm. like, something's like wrong that I'm spending so long on this paper.
Right, because we've got this idea that that writing a paper should take a specific amount of time. This idea that's enforced, like, on us by the school system.
Yes.
It's like, well...
It's, like, valid and yeah, otherwise it's, like, this indication of, like, something else.
Yeah. And also, like, it works the other way, too. Like, if you say, oh, I wrote this paper in 3 days, then the implication is, like, I didn't work very hard on it.
Totally.
When, like, sometimes it's that there was, like...
gust of... One time you wrote a paper, what was it, a 7,000-word paper in a day?
Yeah. Although that was the modernist manifesto one, so that's kind
that
of a
deserved
different...
that caveat,
It's
yeah.
a different genre.
Yeah. Also a whole different temporal plane.
A whole different temporal plane. The one where I famously wrote a manifesto in the middle of the paper.
Yes. As one does, yeah.
Classic. Classic Lorraine.
Seriously.
But, you know, the idea that a paper should take any specific amount of time negates, like, so many other factors about what goes into the paper writing process.
And, totally.
Like, and if what is going into it is, like, a lot of emotional energy and mental energy and you need to take breaks and also there's a pandemic going on, like, yeah, taking 6 months seems pretty reasonable.
Thank you. I really appreciate that.
It only seems unreasonable if you're, like... a high school teacher who thinks the deadlines matter.
Totally, totally. And the fact that those are constructs, and I think is just exploded in the German education system. And also in my own maturation as a person engaging in academia as a result. But I also, because I know one other way that this manifests for me is, I think we actually talked about this in the beginning of the pandemic, that I was trying to... almost because it made me feel, because we talked about before that, like, when we have a lot of demands, it can be sort of like a relief to make a schedule to like factor everything in. And it's like, okay, I got this. Like, and that can be really helpful. And I am very like schedule oriented and like to-do list oriented. And that actually does cause me to feel a lot more, it helps me to get stuff done and to like see and like prioritize and work quickly on the things that I need to finish. And all this kind of stuff. Like that's a big kind of source of like mental comfort for me in a way to have that. But I know in the beginning of this, when I started working on this paper, after I returned to Berlin, that I was trying to work like 6 hours a day, every day. And that was like, and then I remember we talked about it and I was like, that's, doesn't make any sense. Like, I'm just, this is just arbitrary thing that I'm doing. It's not like during, and we kind of talked about how instead just maybe work as little as possible, this but as also, quality as possible.
Yeah, this is also like 6 hours is a long time.
There's no way that I would be able to. I think that I have like a 2 hour span before, I mean, not to say I can't take a break and come back, but like 2 hours probably before I find that I'm just naturally like getting distracted by stuff. And then that's, I can't just work for, and this is this like weird imposed capitalist time that like our humans work like that actually. Yeah,
that we normally work 8 hours a day. What? No, we don't.
Yeah.
Like, no one who's worked a job is working
all that time. Yeah. Yeah. You're pretending to do it and you're maybe doing it for like half that time. Come on.
At best.
Yeah.
Having worked in an office in recent memory.
Shudder.
I use a time tracking timer app on my phone. An excellent app called Flora, which I highly recommend.
Coming through with all the apps.
Yeah, yes.
Free that's, advertising.
That's the surprise like bonus of this episode.
Yes.
So I use that whenever I'm doing like focused work. And I really enjoy using it because it's like a fun timer and it like grows plants and I find it extremely pleasing. So whenever I'm working, I like to be using that. And I know from using that each week, because like at the end of the week, it tells you how much time you spent. I am spending between like 10 and 15 hours working.
That's per cool. Week. That's good to know, like to be aware of that. Mm. And you're definitely like a person that likes to do work, you know? So like, and work on stuff and put in time to. So if I would consider you like one of the most dedicated workers I know. Thank so you. Knowing that is like, it's, that's useful info, mm-hmm. You know?
And of course there's like times when I'm working and I don't have it on or like doing more light unfocused work, but like that's actually the amount of work that
you're,
I would
like
say
genuinely is, working on stuff.
I would say that constitutes the bulk of the work I do. That's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
That's like 1.5 days.
Yeah.
Office time.
And I think that when we move away from this like commodified standardized units of time, that's like the genuine like realistic thing. And it's like, well, sometimes again we need to question like whether the system is actually like working for people. And you know, there is all this talk already about UBI and just generally like shortened work weeks or even working from home and like moving out of this like weirdly just because it's like connected to money, mm-hmm. We have to like live by this like random thing that no one is really living by anyway. Because as we're saying, you're working for like half the work day and then you're just like pretending to work for the rest of it. Like,
I remember when I was working this office job, I would like go in and I would do an hour of work and then I'd be done all my work. And then I'd be like sitting around for like 5 hours waiting for my boss to show up to tell me what to do next.
Being in here.
So dumb.
Yeah. It's very silly. Or yeah, like having to like pretend. I know at this cafe where I work now, a thing that I like about it is that the general vibe is like much more relaxed. But the other cafe location of the same cafe that I was working at before, I was talking with some of my former coworkers who work with me now again. And we were saying how it was like any second that you weren't doing something just because you were there, they would like put you to work, you know, like that you would have done everything would have been running fine and like you'd be getting your stuff done and they would see you. We were like making jokes like all day about how like we'd have like 1 second where we would like look at each other and start and then like our manager would see us and be like, get to work. And we're just like, why are we doing this? It's just so unnecessary. And you're just like finding busy work for us to do because we're here and you can't stand the idea of us like possibly taking like a second.
Right. Don't fabricate work to fill up time.
Yeah.
Use your time to do the work that needs to get done.
And then move on with your life. And then like let us have a structure that allows us to do that. Yeah. And also just the idea of leisure time. And I think something that is interesting about our generation, and we've talked a lot about work and like the kind of difference between like the way that we describe work as things that like we are choosing to do and not necessarily things that are, the difference between like work as we describe it and wage labor mm-hmm. is a crucial distinction, I think, on this podcast.
That absolutely.
Comes up a lot. But I think something that I find is interesting about our generation is that like a lot of the neoliberal ideology has worn off, where in our parents' generation, the idea of not working is sort of taboo. It's like seen as lazy or somehow morally bankrupt. But I feel like so many of like, my friends, whenever there's been maybe a blip of time where they didn't have a job, obviously it's stressful because we need to make money to live in the stupid system, which is a whole other tangent I will not get into, even though you all know I would love to. But that basically like we admit to each other like actually not working is awesome. Like having free time where we're not engaging in wage labor, like the actual experience of that is great. Of course, yes, there's the financial imperative that one must. Mm-hmm. But then you start thinking like I'm giving hours of my life to twiddling my thumbs in this place just because I have to do that so I can eat.
Right.
You know, and it's just like a crazy, wacky, weird way of living on this stupid time system that they've all forced us into instead of just letting people, you know, follow their actual passions and also have like free time mm-hmm. and work less. And I think you'll appreciate this, but there is like this kind of thing that I see getting thrown around that like peasants working in like under serfdom in the Middle Ages had like way more free time. You know, they were like slaves of the Lord, but they were not working that much. They talk about this, how like pre-industrial times were not, why are you laughing?
I'm just thinking like, what do you do in your free time as a medieval peasant? It's
true. Drink, honestly. You probably drink beer.
Yeah, but like really weak beer. Probably. Sorry. I was laughing, like imagining all the fun things that they'd be doing in their free time.
But probably not. That's why you're laughing.
Exactly.
But the point is like this way of working is not like an inherent or natural way of being that has existed for a long time or that it even makes sense. Like mm-hmm. even under more oppressive, this is the idea, like even under what we consider to be like these more oppressive, like I think that oftentimes people who justify capitalism are like, yeah, but like people were free to like sell their labor and they weren't like stuck working for under like a kind of tyrant lord that like kind of owned them. It's like at least like the way that we work now is so pervasively regimented and so our time and like the level of capacity of work that we're expected to do is so much higher than it has been in the past or needs to be now, as well as I think another important part of this and like a deindustrialized and post-industrial society. So we're all working in a way that is just like, it's not necessary and it's like,
0 out of 10.
Yeah, I think that's really all I have to say about time right now. What have you been reading?
I foreshadowed this earlier. I have been listening to a book called The Rise and Fall of the Dinosaurs, which, semi-little known fact about Lorraine, as a child, I was like hardcore obsessed with dinosaurs.
Really?
Yeah, and like, I mean, lots of kids love dinosaurs, so there's like normal child obsession with dinosaurs. I was like, so...
Wow, I did not know that about you.
It is a little known fact. And
where do you think that came from? What excited you so much about them?
That's a great question. They're just so cool. I think it probably helped that I grew up in like one of the global hotspots for paleontology. Like,
okay, I didn't know that.
Alberta is like dinosaur territory.
And wow,
like,
I really didn't know that.
Yeah. But I also, you know, part of it is probably that I get really into things.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a classic. A lot of kids, I think, that turn out to be really into other things as they get older. It all started with dinosaurs.
It all started with dinosaurs. I love dinosaurs so much that I once proved that I didn't have a concussion by telling the nurse all about the tiny little dinosaur stick-on tattoo that I had on my hand.
Nice one.
That's good.
Just keep that one in your back pocket in case that ever comes up again.
on brand Lorraine content. And so it's been really fun to revisit some of that by listening to this book in a way that's very it's like this information is not stuff I already knew or that I already have in my brain, but like a lot of it is actually familiar to me.
Okay, cool.
And so that's been a really positive reading experience in terms of kind of learning something new, but inside a framework that's not what I'm doing all the time.
And it's like a bit comforting probably because it reminds you of childhood.
Of my innocent childhood, yes. Yeah, so that's been lots of fun.
Cool, that's nice to hear. Mm-hmm. I haven't really gotten so deep into audiobooks, but I have a friend that really burns through a lot of books when she listens to them on audio.
Yeah, I'm super into audiobooks.
Maybe I should find a... I think she might also use... Is it Libby?
Yeah.
I think she uses that.
That it really helps because then it's infinite free audiobooks.
Yeah, also. Yeah, so I think she was complaining that like the next book in the series was like on loan. Is that how are they on loan if they're on a virtual app? Is that correct?
Like, yeah, it is. The library only has a license to a specific number of them.
Ah, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah,
I was like, that's just they're emulating a little bit too closely the reality of like material libraries. Is that just for the UI, like the user experience?
Well, or? No, it does have like legal reasons, okay. But it is also part of the whole.
You know, they're just trying. They're trying to recreate the feeling, especially under these trying pandemic times.
These capital U unprecedented capital T times.
You know the ones. Yeah. What have I been reading? I have like a lot of books that I'm wanting to read and that I hope to read, but it's as we've said, it's been slow going. Mm-hmm. I'm currently reading two books though. Immersion Strategy, which I have mentioned several times on this podcast, because there have been several times where I have been about to start it and then like something came up that I like something else I needed to read more quickly. But I'm wanting to use this book because it really does a good job of this other paper that I'm writing is basically about how like anarchist tactics can be or already do intersect and can be useful in the transformative justice movement. In that, like, the ways of thinking that anarchy requires are the same ones that transformative justice require in terms of moving, like, so much out of a lot of the ingrained systems that we have that aren't really working into, like, a much more holistic and, like, more kind of active citizen role that I think anarchy does a really good job of promoting and also offering ways of doing so. And so this activist, Adrienne Marie Brown, who is both largely like kind of inclined towards anarchy and movement building and tactics, she kind of connects that with the transformative justice movement. And it's also, if you remember the material turn class, it fits really well with that as well.
Vividly.
Her kind of metaphors and her way she does a lot of things of looking at biomimicry and the way that like nature is organized is a kind of way of understanding how we can organize ourselves more in these ways. It's really a cool book. It's very inspiring. So I'm reading that. And I'm also reading a book, a fiction book. It's called Icarus Girl. It's by, I can't remember what her name is, but it's by a Nigerian English writer. So it's kind of, it's cool. I mean, it's a bit, it's like getting darker and darker. A friend recommended it to me, but it's basically about, it's cool because it integrates like Nigerian mythology basically into this, girl's life where there's this child whose mother's Nigerian. Her father's English. She lives in England and she's being like haunted by, a ghost, I think of someone in her family, but it's not clear from the past. From Nigeria, but it's also unclear if this girl, if it's like, it's one of these things where it's like, is this like living out this mythology or is this girl just like crazy? You know what I mean? It's like, is it, you know, this kind of like thing that they do sometimes in books where it's like, you're not, it's ambiguous which one it is. Like, is she really seeing this and this is like this sort of like magical realist book or is she actually just totally like gradually going insane?
Love that. That's one of my favorite genres.
Love that. That specific. Is it even, I think you could even say, is it kind of like a gothic novel? Especially because it's like a twin, you know? I feel like they love like a scary twin scenario.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Like, so it's very much like that. I think it kind of in that way even has connections. I think a lot of Toni Morrison's books have this sort of like gothic quality actually, where there's like this weird like gossamer, like is this real or is it fake, and it's like things are just happening and you're like you're not sure if like, and it's kind of up to you to decide if it's real or not. It's this all that kind of jazz. So So yeah, it's called Icarus Girl. So yeah, hopefully I finish these soon, because as I say, I'm trying. But I'm also trying not to be so like regimented capitalist time about burning through books.
Right.
But I have found that it's taking me a while to read books.
It takes the amount of time it takes to read. How long does it take to read a book? The amount of time it takes.
I love it. I'm here for it. I'm going to start using that in various scenarios with professors, employers. It takes as much time as I need it to take.
I think they should understand that.
They should, especially after these capital T times. I didn't really execute that well, but you guys know what I'm talking about.
It takes practice. Yeah, and it's also much easier in writing.
I would imagine so.
Does that about wrap
it up? I think that's a good note to end on.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for listening.
Thanks once again. I hope that your capital T... I did that on purpose. I hope your times are going okay out there.
I hope that this episode gave you some things to think about your times, your capital T time.
Your relationship to time. And anyway, we'll see you next time. You'll hear us next time.
We will not
see you. Technically. Maybe not ever, really. Gonna end it.